Okay.
Where are we holding?
So we're going to be continuing on Daf Beis Amud Beis. So 2B, right on the top. We had just did the first line. So we're up to line number 2, where the Gemara is asking a follow-up question. That the first question the Gemara asked is, why does our Mishnah choose a language of acquisition? To say, Ha'isha Niknes, the woman is acquired, when in the second parak, the first Mishnah in the second chapter uses the term Ha'ish Mekadesh, that the man sanctifies or betroths. So he uses a language of Kiddushin, as opposed to our Mishnah, which uses a language of acquisition, a language of Kinyan. So that was question number one, and we said it was there to teach us, the Mishnah wanted to teach us that you could get married with money. Something that we take it for granted, every Jewish wedding that you've ever been to, was the marriage ceremony took place with something of value, where the groom gave a ring.
Right.
So that's every wedding you've ever been to. You take it for, and I take it for granted. That had to be taught at some point.
Right.
This Mishnah was teaching it. By using a language of kinyan, of acquisition, it's teaching us that kesef.
What do you think they gave originally, though, before rings?
Before rings, they gave, if you wanted
livestock, or
you could give anything of value. It had to have value, and they could go ahead. One of the reasons why they developed the usage of a ring was so that, because there could be times that you could, and that's why we use a very simple ring. We don't use one with a stone, because sometimes that you could have the appearance of having value when really it doesn't have value. So we made something uniform that always has, you know, it always has to have value. But before you could have, you know, it's not so romantic, but you could have gotten, you know, you could have gotten married with a pen. You could have said, Hariat Mekudeshes Li, but pen zu, Kedas Moshe of Yisrael, a pen, you know, in Staples is, you know, $2. That has value. You could sell it. And so, you know, you could have gotten married with anything. Could have gotten married with
it. Before the gold rings, what do you think they were doing?
Coin money was around already, you know, in the time. I mean, we just talked about Avram buying whether you had actual money, whether you just had, you know, a talent of silver, so, you know, a portion of silver. But that was definitely usable. So now the Gemara is going to ask the exact follow-up question on line number 2. V'nisni hasam ha'ishkona? Over there, so once the opening Mishnah in chapter 1 used the language of Kinyan, so why doesn't the language match up? And in chapter 2, it should say, instead of saying Ha'ish Mekadesh, it should say Ha'ish Kona, the man acquires. Meaning once we're using this language of Kinyan, of acquisition, why not have it go straight through? Why not have it be uniform? That the first chapter has the language of Kinyan, the second chapter has the language of Kinyan, and everyone, you know, it'll fit. So that's the question. Right? Line 2 on Daf Beis Amud Beis. So what's the answer to this question? So the answer, it almost appears that the question is slightly stronger than the answer. The answer is Meikara Tani Lishne Daraisa. Originally, in the first Mishnah that we have, which is the first Mishnah of our Perek, so it taught a language that's considered to be Daraisa, that the Kinyan is a language that's Daraisa, because Kinyan is representative of the acquisition, which the Torah records the words ki yikach ish isha, that when a man takes a woman, and the taking and acquisition are like synonyms. Ulabasof, and in the end, in reference to what's in the second chapter, Tani Lishna Derabanan, it taught a rabbinic language, that somehow, we're about to explain it, the language of saying mikadesh, and what we say, what we actually said, what you said way back when at your weddings, hareat mikudeshesli, the term mikudeshes is considered to be a rabbinic language. It's an invention of the rabbis to use that word for marriage. But the Torah didn't use that word for marriage.
What did they say before that?
The Torah uses the word ki yikach ish isha. If anything, you would call it, you know, something like likuchin. You would call it taking a wife.
And they changed it.
And the rabbis invented this term called mikudeshes. And we're going to explain why. So what the Gemara is explaining is that our first Mishnah chose to use a biblical language, and that's why it had a language of acquisition, while the Mishnah in the second chapter chose to use a language of a rabbinically formed language of mikudeshes, of sanctification. So the Gemara then, at the end of line 3, says, Umay lishin derabanan. So what is this rabbinic language? What is the essence of saying mikudeshes, that saying that you're sanctified? Why is that a rabbinic, what is that rabbinic formulation all about? Why did they use that word, sanctify? What is sanctity? We know that sanctity has to do with marriage. But in the world of halacha, when usually say something is sanctified, what does it mean? In the world of halacha, it means you dedicated something to the temple. There was something called hektish, where you could decide you're in a good mood, you had a good season of business, and you decide you want to give something back to the temple, so you might make something holy, you might sanctify something, which means it now belongs to the temple. You'll bring it to the temple, and the treasurer of the temple will sell it and use the proceeds for upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, upkeep of the temple. So what is that? So that's the Gemara's question. My lishna derabbanan, why would the rabbis formulate a language of marriage that has to do with sanctity? So answers the Gemara, because de'asar la akule alma, it's an abbreviation, kehektish. Because what are you doing when you're getting married? You are making her prohibited. You're making her usar on the entire world, on the entire male population of the world, kehektish, like she's hektish. Mm-hmm. It's the same. So what the Gemara seems to be saying is the rabbis went ahead and said, look what you're doing. When you sanctify an object to the Beis HaMikdash, you make it off limits. No one else can have benefit from it. In essence, well, you know, you have to figure out the romantic way to explain this, but in essence, what you're doing is you're now, by you getting married, you're saying, young lady, you are no longer permitted to any other man in the world. Right. You can explain it romantically. And we're actually going to see that in Tosfos, I think. Not, Tosfos doesn't use the word romantic. I think our feelings of romance have changed since 800 years ago, if not, and definitely more than that. So what the Gemara seems to be answering, just going back to the original question. The original question was, why doesn't our Mishnah in the second Perek use the same language of acquisition? Ha'ish koneh? Says, no. We're actually going to learn something out. First, in our Mishnah, in the first Perek, we'll learn what's called the Lashon Daraisa, the biblical language of acquisition. And then in the second parak, the rabbis are what we're doing is we're learning the rabbinic language. The rabbinic language, and that's actually the language that really sticks. Look at what this mesechta is called. It's called Meseches Kiddushin. And what's the line that we all say under our chuppah? Harehat mikudeshesli. We actually make use of this line. What is the meaning behind the word mikudeshes? Is this rabbinic analogy that just like when someone sanctifies something to the temple, it's off limits for benefit for others. So too, when you enter into that first stage of marriage, you're making her prohibited from all others. Now, there is a thinking, right? If you take it one step further, if this analogy was really true, so if we were living in a time of the Beis HaMikdash, and you have an item, here I'm holding a tissue box, and if you would say, I'm making this tissue box hektish, I'm making it that it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, so not only can you not have benefit from it, but who else can have benefit from it? Me. Meaning when you make something belong to the Beis HaMikdash, that's it. It's reserved for Beis HaMikdash. No person, including yourself, right? So you would never want, you know, you would never want to take your car and make your car hektish, because once you make your car hektish, you can't use it.
So just like your wife, you wouldn't want to make her hektish.
So if you take this analogy to the nth degree, right. So not only can every other man in the world not benefit physically from the wife, from that woman, but you too.
Right.
So it obviously can't be a full analogy. So Tosfos picks up on that point. So if you take a look at Tosfos on the outside of the page, the Dibur HaMaskil, the Asar. So Tosfos is basically asking this question, where he says, V'harei at mikudeshesli, the line that we all say under our chuppah, and you are hereby sanctified unto me, which also means you are hereby betrothed to me. Klomar, what does that mean to say? Lios li mikudeshes la'olam bishvili. It means that you are sanctified forever on my behalf. That word bishvili is very important because that's the understanding. It's not that you're taking the analogy to the total complete full analogy. It's that you are sanctified, but on my behalf. Which means you're still permitted that the husband is still permitted. Kimo, Tosfos brings a proof from a line in the Gemara in Nedarim, where the Gemara says, "Harehin mukdashin l'shamayim, lios l'shamayim." That if someone ever said the following phrase, that you took an item and you said, "This item is hereby sanctified unto heaven," that means that heaven is allowed to benefit from it. It doesn't mean that heaven is also not allowed to benefit. Meaning the fact that you're using a language of sanctity doesn't always mean 100%. It means there can be an allowance. The same way if you sanctify something to heaven, so for heavenly purposes, benefit is allowed. So too, what you're doing here, Tosos goes on to explain, Upashta de Milsa, what does mikudeshesli mean? The explanation of this term of mikudeshesli means miyuchedesli. You are singled out for me. You are the only person in the world who you could be intimate with is me. Umizumenesli, you're prepared for me. You're reserved for me. And that's what, it doesn't mean that she's like hektish, that it's totally off limits. And then Tosfos goes on to say that this is rather unique. This idea of saying hareat mikudeshesli is only really reserved for marriage. You can't use a language like that for something else.
So when the kids do it in school and they're fooling around, that's a serious thing, right?
That's a very serious thing.
Yeah.
When kids, when we mentioned
stories
it,
about that.
Unfortunately, it happens too often, and kids, you can get into real trouble. Now, what's real trouble means that you might have to give that the boy might have to give the girl a divorce document, a get, which.
I mean, a 12-year-old. I mean, you're
right, which is not which on the
have to be bar mitzvah, at least.
Right, the boy and the girl, yeah, right? So, but in high school, right. and then the problem is she can't marry a kohen then,
right.
Which, okay, but you know, to close yourself off from 10-15% of the population for no good reason,
right.
Meaning when it happens that a person's married and gets divorced, okay, it happens, and then she has to deal with the fact that she can't marry a kohen,
right?
But you know, and a kohen who's looking to get remarried, it's sometimes hard because in the 40-50-year-old dating market, many of the women are divorced, and a kohen can't date those women. But there's no reason why, let's say, a young high school girl should close herself off from those
right.
possibilities. So yeah, it's very serious. So Tosfos goes on to say,
never really realized that a kohen would get stuck single in his 50s or something.
It's very challenging.
Yeah, but they find loopholes. A woman who's divorced, or sometimes, I mean, you find out that maybe the woman.
I mean, the loophole. I mean, if she got married,
yeah,
halakhically,
okay. Well, right. But the question
orthodox,
is, so they start looking at it and they say, okay, well, the witnesses, are they still this?
Right, but
you know?
I'm saying when you think about the people, that, you know, hopefully in your life who are similar to you, the same way you got married orthodox.
Hopefully it's
they got married orthodox.
Hopefully, right.
Right. And then, also finding loopholes there. Even if they didn't get married, even if someone didn't get married Orthodox, but then they've been living, let's say the husband and wife live in a place like New Rochelle, where they are living a Jewish lifestyle. Everyone
right.
looks at them as being Jewish, and they have a family. We would view them as married. And they would need, if they were getting a divorce, they would need a get, and then she would be labeled as a divorcee. So, you know, it is. But the Torah, you know, that, you know, with great, I'm quoting something, but with great, I don't know, privilege comes great responsibility. I don't know who I'm quoting, some line from somewhere.
Yes.
So a Kohen has all these privileges.
Probably Churchill or someone, I don't know.
So with, you know, there's a responsibility. There's a whole set of laws that apply to a Kohen that don't apply to you and me.
Right.
But, you know, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, they get to serve in the Beis HaMikdash and we don't. It's So Toso says at the end, or four lines up from the bottom, at the end of the line, Umihu, however, Imhaya Omer Talis Zu Mekudushli. Let's say a person took a garment, took a talis, and he said, you know, talis, you are hereby Mekudeshesli. Ein nirah sheyoil. Toso says that doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't work to say that you're sanctifying something, and sanctifying something means that it goes towards the Beis HaMikdash, but I'm allowed to use it. The rest of the world wouldn't be allowed to use it. It's sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash, but I am. Tosfos says that doesn't work. The only place it works is by a woman. The Gabi Isha, the fact that you are singling her out for you, he naseres lakol, she becomes usher to everyone else. Any other object, you would never be able to sanctify by saying, you're hereby sanctified to me. Meaning you're off limits to the rest of the world, but not to me. That doesn't work. Now, why is that? So Tosfos explained the what. The what is that this line of Hareat Mekudeshesli only works for a woman. It won't work for an item. But why? Why is that? So there's a beautiful approach. One of the great Torah sages of, you can't even say the previous generation. It's like the previous generation. His name was Rav Shimon Shkop. Rav Shimon Shkop was a leading student of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik in the early 1900s. He passed away in October of 1939, just after the war had started. I don't believe it was war related. And there was actually a 2-year period where he was in America fundraising, and he got a job teaching at the yeshiva that was Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elkanan, the yeshiva that turned into Yeshiva University. He got a job teaching there. So for people don't, because he's more in line with, what we call the yeshivish velt, they don't always like to talk about the fact that for 2 years he was a Rosh Yeshiva at YU. And then he also founded his own yeshiva in a town in Poland called Grodno, and the yeshiva was called Yeshiva Shar HaTorah. And the yeshiva nowadays, in 5776, in Queens, there might be one in Yerushalayim as well, there's a yeshiva in Queens that was founded by one of his Talmidim, Reb Zelig Epstein Zatzal. So Reb Shimon Shkop, he explains the why. Why is this line of Harayat Mikudesh Asli, why does it work by marriage, but it wouldn't work by an item? So he explains as follows, and I actually have it for you in his writings. So if you take a look at the source sheet.
So this is an acceptance by a woman when it can't be an acceptance by an item, by an object?
So it's going to be something like that. Okay. It's going to be something like that. So take a look at source number one on the sheet that we have. These are the novel thoughts of Reb Shimon Shkop. So he says, "Ukmosha kasav betosvos daf beis." The Tosfos that we just learned, Amud Beis, Divar Maskel, the Asar La Kulei Alma Kehektish. He's just citing the source. So now he gives the Im Yomar Adam Talis Zu Miuchedes Li Lo Mahani. Tosfos taught that if a person said this talis is hereby reserved for me, it doesn't work. That's not an effective language. Va'adavar misbayer, this matter is explained. Behevdel hishtanus minachalos hakinyan, in the difference in how the acquisition is effective. Dechol dvarim haniknim, any item that is acquired. Lo nasa shum shinoi bedavar hanikne, nothing is changed in the item. If you get a new smartphone today, nothing changed. The only thing that changed is rak be'inyan habaylim, in terms of the owners, the yatsumir shus l'rishus, that today the phone belonged to Verizon, and now that you bought it, now it's my phone. But did the phone change? It's the same phone. It looks the same. It smells the same. Next week when you drop it on the floor, then the phone changed. But anytime you buy an item, at the moment that you buy the item, you did not affect a halachic status in the item. The only thing that changes is it used to belong to Reuven and now it belongs to Shimon. So the act of acquisition did not change the physical item. As opposed to ubekdusha saguf, ubekdusha isha, when it comes to marriage. So when you do this act of kinyan, nasa shinui bedavar hanikne, you are affecting an actual change in that which was acquired, namely the woman. And that allows you to reserve for a specific purpose.
And you're changing
meaning
her status.
You're changing
it's
her
not
status.
A question of the physical contact later on, it's just the action.
Right. But the fact that the fact that you know that you're proposing a kiddushin, and you extend something of value, and you say, I'm hereby betrothing you, and she accepts it, and there are two witnesses, she now has become usher to the entire world. There's a halachic status change. Since there's halachic status change, you can go ahead and kind of divert it and say that she's reserved for me, that the language can work. As opposed to other acts of acquisition, there's no halachic change to the actual item. Now, there are some interesting outcomes. This line that the rabbis connect the language of marriage to sanctity and to sanctifying things to the temple. So there are a couple of interesting outcomes that come out. The Gemara later on, and we'll see if we get to it together. If not, what happens if you say to a woman, you are hereby betrothed to me today and only for today. And tomorrow you're free. Let's say you say such a language, right? Ridiculous, but the Talmud talks about ridiculous cases. That's what makes it interesting. So you say to a woman, you're hereby betrothed to me today, but it's only today. It's So what is it? Tomorrow we're not married. So the Gemara says you're fully married. Why? Because of this connection to Hekdesh. If I take an item, if I take my pen, and I say I'm hereby sanctifying my pen to the Beis HaMikdash today, but tomorrow it's going to revert back to me, that doesn't work. Once it becomes belonging to the Beis HaMikdash, it belongs fully to the temple, and I cannot, it will never come back into my possession. So too, if you extend Kiddushin, real, right, you can't imagine that anyone would go through all our wedding preparations and do this. But it was more. This is more like the fly-by-night Kiddushin, where there are two witnesses, you have something of value, you turn to the young lady, you say, you're hereby betrothed, you know, things are going well, not so well, I don't want to be married to you forever. One day, I think I can handle, you know, this is a terrible joke, you know, that you know, being married to you is, it's flown by like 2 days, Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av. You know, this is a terrible joke. But you can't say that you'll only be married for one day, and the lesson is because of the connection to Kiddushin. Same thing, another wacky case. Let's say you walk over to a woman and you say, Hare, half of your body is mukudeshesli. You know, your right side of your body is mukudeshesli, but not your left side of your body. What's the case? Well, the guy said it. He's a schnook. He shouldn't have said something ridiculous like that. But he did it. He gave her something of value in front of two witnesses, and he said, the left side of your body is mukudeshesli. What's the status, rabbis? So the Gemara says, the same idea with Hekdesh. If you cannot say, right here we're sitting at a table, I want to say, you know what, I'm going to sanctify half of this table to the Beis HaMikdash. You know what happens when you do that? The whole table becomes sanctified. Because you can't, once sanctity is entering, in, on a halachic level, is entering to the table, it infuses the entire table.
Unless you cut the table.
Oh, so if you cut the table, right. If you could say, I want to sanctify half a table, maybe you have to cut it first. That's the truth.
Right.
Maybe you have to cut it first. But once you cut it, then you're sanctifying half a table. Now, what they do with half a table, you know, whatever, they sell it for parts.
So you have to cut the woman in half, technically. I mean, you know.
Right, so we can't do that.
We can't do that.
Okay. So, the reason why I'm bringing it out is because we see a halachic reality, that this idea that the rabbis made this connection to sanctity, so it has halachic ramifications, that if you would say, you are here, half of you is betrothed to me, she'd be fully married to you. Right. Fully married to you, just like the analogy to sanctity. Okay. Let's go to the next piece of the Gemara, which is on the end of line 4, where the Gemara is still nitpicking on the language. And originally, the original question that the Gemara asked is, why does our Mishnah start with the term ha'isha niknes, that a woman is acquired? It could have used the language of kiddushin like it did in the second parak. Now we're going to ask, why do we mention the woman first? Right? Last word on the fourth line. V'nisne hacha, the Mishnah should have taught over here, ha'ish koneh. Why not say the man acquires? In parak 2, we say the man sanctifies. So why shouldn't parak 1 open with the line, the man acquires. Put it all in the man. The man acquires a woman in one of three ways. Kesef, shtar, bia, what we learned. So that's the question. Meaning, why mention the woman? Why not mention the man? So answers the Gemara. Mishum de kabai lemisna seifa. Because the Mishnah wanted to teach us the last line of the seifa. And the last line of the Seifa is, the last line of the Mishnah, the second case is, not only how she enters marriage, but the kona es atzma, that she can acquire herself. She gets back her independence. And the Gemara told us, with either a get or her husband dying. So since the Mishnah wanted to teach me that in terms of her perspective, how she acquires her independence, so now the Gemara is saying, that's why the Mishnah taught me in the opening line, she enters into marriage, she is acquired by marriage. It puts that she's the subject. Since she's the subject of the later part, which talks about her gaining her independence, so too she should be the subject of the first part, and it should open with the words Ha'isha.
Unless both parts were, let's say, the man. How does a man get his independence? Then you could start off with how the man acquired.
Correct. But it's saying, since we wanted to teach how she got, meaning because in some ways the man never loses his independence.
Of multiple wives.
On a level of the Torah, he could have two wives. So in some, I mean, we all know what happens when you get married. independence. That's why. That's the other joke. Why the chassan breaks the glass, right? You know that one?
No, it's a joke.
Why does a chassan break the glass under the chuppah? This is the last time he's putting his foot down.
Okay, I like that.
So, okay, you know, so yeah, you win some, lose some. I can't believe you never heard that one. I was like,
maybe I did. I just don't remember it so
long. Yeah. You don't want to say it under the chuppah, but so since the Mishnah wanted to teach a language of that she's going to acquire her independence, so she's the subject. Grammatically, right. She's the subject. So the Gemara says, Bidida, it's in her. It's in her, the ball is in her court. So Tananami Resha Bidida. So we also learn the first line of the Mishnah in her court. That she's the subject. So the Mishnah says, well, I could change, the Gemara says, I could change that. V'nisne ha'ish kone umakne. You could just use a language of the man acquires and the man allows her to acquire herself. Right? When a man gives her a divorce, that's basically what he's doing. He allows her. So the subject could be from the male perspective. So says the Gemara, hold on. Mishum de'ika misa sabal. But there's another way out of marriage. The second way out of marriage is death. Now death, delav ihu kamakne. He is not affecting her independence by dying. Min shamayahu demakne la. It's heaven. It's heaven, right? You don't, in most cases, the person himself does not decide that he's going to die.
Right.
So his death cannot be that he is allowing her independence. It's that God is allowing her independence because God said it's time to be called back and to be the time to die. So since one of the two cases of her gaining her independence is not in the hands of the man, so the husband can't be the subject. It can't be, and the man allows her to gain her independence in one of two ways, because only one of the ways is in under his control, giving the get. The other one is under the control of heaven. So therefore, so we go back to what we just said. Since the last case of the Mishnah, of her gaining her independence, she's the subject. So to be uniform, we have the opening line of the Mishnah also have her as her being the subject. Now what the Gemara does here, the Gemara does in many places, that it provides another answer. That abbreviation, Vav Aleph, Beis Aleph, V'i Bayis Ema. Which literally means, if you want to say, code word for an alternative answer. Now, sometimes we give an alternative answer, and you can try to discuss sometimes why was it necessary to give an alternative answer? Was there something deficient about one answer that you needed an alternative answer? Or just there were multiple answers, the same way that you could ask a question here at the table and we could get multiple answers. So at one point, way back when, in Babylonia, this question was asked in the study halls, and multiple answers were given. The Ibayis Ema, if you want, you could say, Itana Kone. If the Mishnah here would have had, the opening line in the Masechta would have been Ha'ish Kone, the man acquires. Hava Amina, I might have thought Afilu Bal Karcha. I might have thought that you could maybe even get married against her will. That's if the Mishnah would have that phrase Ha'ish Kone, I might think that the man is so in control of the situation that he can affect a marriage with a woman even if she's not consenting. Mm-hmm. So therefore, Tana Ha'isha Niknes. That's why the opening line of the Mishnah is that the woman is acquired, saying and the focus here, we're putting focus on the word Ha'isha. Ha'isha, what is that? That the woman, Demidaita in, that if she has Das, if she's consenting in, the marriage will work. Shalom Midaita, if she's not consenting, lo, the marriage won't work. And that we learn that out from the word Ha'isha. At least the simple understanding of the Gemara, that the word Ha'isha, the Ha'isha Niknes, the fact that we're mentioning the woman, teaches us this very important idea that the woman has to agree, has to consent to the marriage, which is very important. So how does the language work? So if you take a look at source number 2 on the sheet that we have, which is some of the commentary of the Rashba. The Rashba, Reb Shlomo ben Aderet, was one of the Spanish Rishonim who lived in the late 1200s, very early 1300s. And he was a very important link in the chain. I believe his Rebbe was the Ramban, Nachmanides, and his student was the Ritva. So some of the more classical Rishonim, who we quote, the Sephardic Rishonim, You almost can't go through a Talmudic sugya without mentioning one of them: the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva. So they actually were a chain of Rebbe student: the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ritva. So the Rashba says as follows in source number 2 in his commentary on the Gemara: Tana Hayisha nicknames the midaita in Balkarchalo. A woman is acquired, meaning if she has das, if she has knowledge, and she agrees, in the marriage will work. Balkarcha, if it's against her will, it won't work. V'im tomar, he asks. V'im tomar, if you want to say it's asking, adiraba. I think you might think it's actually the opposite. Nicknames, the language of being acquired. When you say that phrase, Haisha nicknames, the woman is acquired, saying those words is acquired, balkarcha mashma. You might think that that actually implies against her will. Utnan nami, and he tries to prove this question in our Mishnah, that the Mishnah also states about the case of the levirate marriage, hayavama nicknames, that the sister-in-law who has to marry the brother-in-law, nicknames is acquired, dahainu balkarcha, and in that situation, it can be against her will. In the situation of Yibam, it might be hard for us in our, Western culture sensitivity minds, but, that's relatively new. Western culture wasn't around in Babylonia 1,500 years ago. That by Yibam it can be against the will. Kithnan, we learned in a Mishnah in Yevamos, Habal Yevimto, if the brother-in-law is intimate with that sister-in-law who he's supposed to marry, this levirate marriage, bein be'ones, bein be'ratzon, whether on purpose, whether by accident, bein b'shogi, bein b'mezid, kina. If they would get drunk one night, mm-hmm. and have a one-night stand in a dark hotel room, and then in the morning they wake up and they realize, whoa, it's my brother-in-law, it's my sister-in-law, we were supposed to have Yibam, they're married because for whatever reason, the way the Torah formulated Yibam, they just have to be intimate. Once they're intimate, they have that levirate marriage. So the Rashba's question is that the fact that we have this word nicknames is acquired, that sounds pretty, that language is hinting that maybe it could be against her will. So Yesh Lomar, so the Rashba says, in here you have to be extremely sensitive to language. You have to understand that and it happens, I imagine. We have any lawyers at the table? Okay. But lawyers are very sensitive to language, right? You could build a whole case. Millions of dollars can be on the line when language is messed up in a contract. So we understand that language, to be sensitive to language. So the Rashba is teaching us sensitivity to language here. The Yesh Lomar, towards the end of line 2, he gives the answer, dekone, using the word kone. If it would have said the man acquires, the word kone, mashma vadai balkarcha. That has a real connotation, a certain connotation that it could be against her will. Aval niknes, the Rashba says, and again, if you're not, I'm personally not so sensitive to language, so I don't understand it fully, and I take the Rashba's word for it. Aval niknes, being is acquired, the word niknes, it's a little more passive. Mashma bein midaita bein balkarcha. It's kind of like a pyre of language. It could either be that she's giving consent or against her will. And so we're going with one of those approaches. That's one answer, you could say. Inami, which is code word for a second answer. Ikalamimar, you could say. Dilav mishum kone v'niknes ka'amar. We're actually, this part of the conversation is not whether or not the word kone is used or niknes is used. Elamishum ha'isha. It's the fact that the first word is the woman. The cave and the Tana Ha'isha nicknames. Once you put her on there, once she makes it to the title, that it's called Ha'isha nicknames, Mashma Sheina Kinyan Tali Be'ish, that implies that the acquisition is not only dependent on the man, El Af Be'isha, but also on the woman, that she's a very important part of this. Aval I Tana Ha'ish Koneh, had the Mishnah only taught it from the male perspective of saying Ha'ish Koneh, the man acquires, Have b'mashma shal kol tali boy. Then we would have maybe thought that it's all about the man and only his interests are kept in mind. V'chol shemekadesh miritzonu balkarch mekudeshes. And that anyone who sanctifies a woman, it's all about what he. If he meets a nice woman in the street and he likes her, had the Mishnah said ha'ish koneh, it might have given the impression that he can go and shove a ring on her finger, say harit mekudeshesli, and take her home. Against her will. And the fact that the Rashba says, so what about the Rashba wants to be, the difference between a real Talmud Chacham and a fake is a real Talmud Chacham always wants to be intellectually honest. And even if he gives his answer, He wants to make sure that the answer works fully. And if the answer doesn't work fully, he's ready to take it back. And actually, that lesson goes way back to the time period of Rabbi Akiva. When Rabbi Akiva was around, he had a colleague. The name is skipping me, so I don't want to say it wrong. He had a colleague who decided that every time that the Torah uses the word S, Aleph Saf, it means to include something. That it's coming to include something. And he went ahead and he expounded every S in the Torah. Then he came to a Pasuk where he couldn't expound it. Because the Pasuk is S Hashem Elokecha Tira. God, your God, you will fear. How could you include anything else in the fear of God? And this scholar said, well, if I can't find something here, that means every other time my theory must be false. And he said, just like I got reward in heaven for making such a novel idea, I'm going to get reward in heaven by taking out my eraser and erasing all my novel thoughts and, you know, putting them back and putting them in the garbage. And Rabbi Akiva said, hold on, I can save you. And Rabbi Akiva said that the S in Es Hashem Elokecha Tira means that we have part of the mitzvah of fearing Hashem is to have a fear and a respect for Talmid Chachamim. Now that's included. That's what Rabbi Akiva taught. So Rabbi Akiva saved his colleague, and his colleague didn't have to throw out all those chidushim. But probably the most amazing part of the story, well, first you have Rabbi Akiva helping a friend, which is amazing. He's the man of the Haftar Echa Kamocha. But perhaps the more amazing part is that this colleague was ready to erase all of his novel thoughts because it wasn't intellectually honest. So here the Rashba needs to be intellectually honest because he's the Rashba. He's a real, he doesn't need me to say he's a real Talmid Chacham. He's a real Talmid Chacham. 800 years from now, there's not such a good chance they're going to be talking about you and me. But it's 700 years later, and we're talking about the Rashba. He's in the room right now. The Rashba is standing right here. Came all the way from Girona, Spain, just to learn with us. Last two lines of the Rashba. The Rashba said, in the case of Yevama, Diktani Hayevama Niknes. There it uses the woman. It says Hayevama Niknes. And if you would say, oh, the woman, we're opening with the woman, shouldn't that mean that she gets to say no? But we know by Yibam she doesn't get to say no. So just because you start with the woman, with the name, with the subject as the woman, that doesn't mean. So the Rashba saves. He says, Mishum da'af loshon hayavim kona einu mektutak. Had you put it in the perspective of the male, of the brother-in-law, it also wouldn't have been exact. Mishum da'af shelo ledaito hu kona. Because Yibam is interesting. Not only does she not have to know about it, and she not have to consent, the brother-in-law also doesn't have to consent. Let's say she really has a crush on the brother-in-law. She really wants to marry the brother-in-law. So what does she do? She pulls a Tamar from the Bible. She dresses up like someone else, and just like Tamar consorted with Yehuda. So this sister-in-law does this. That was a case of Yibam. She does the same thing, and she seduces her brother-in-law. And in the morning, it turns out that the brother-in-law and the sister-in-law were together. He wasn't knowledgeable of it. Guess what? They're married. So it's not the fact that the Mishnah, when it says Hayevama Niknes, and it means even against her will, that doesn't disprove the Rashba's theory, and therefore the Rashba's theory still stands. That since the Mishnah opens with the word Ha'isha, that teaches that by marriage, she has to have consent.
So the ceremony, with the shoe and everything, who does that? Is the man or the woman who?
So if you're not electing to do yibam, which nowadays we don't allow you to elect to do yibam, and you're doing what's called chalitza, right. So then it's the ceremony is that he wears the shoe, she removes the shoe and throws it, and she spits on the floor. She's showing how disgraceful this man is. Because he's not living up to take care of his brother's responsibility.
So they both have to participate.
Yeah, they both need to be present physically. A minion has to be there, and usually it's under the guidance of a beis din, because there are rules and regulations that average shul rabbis, not Armar the Asr, could probably know all the laws, but the average shul rabbi can't handle such a thing. We'll end with the comment in source 4 of the Pnei Yoshua. The Pnei Yoshua was an Achron who lived in the late 1600s or mid 1700s, so he says, "I don't." He wants to say you could have really thought that a Jewish girl could be married without consent. That just doesn't sound proper. So he writes in source 4. He says after the period, He says, Nira, the afagav deleka lemite klal b'shum svara shite benos Yisrael hefker. You couldn't really think that Jewish girls would just be, you know, that anyone could come and just pick her up in the middle of the marketplace and marry her against her will. Afilu hachi, even though you can't imagine that, lo shayach lemisni ha'ishkona. We could not teach a language of ha'ishkona, kaven to lishna mashma balkarcha. Since the language smells insensitive, we can't use that. Since it could imply that perhaps you could enter into a marriage against her will, that's such an anti-Torah concept, we can't start the Mishnah that way, and that's why the Mishnah started with the word. Even though, so the Pnei Yeshua was saying, it would never have, you can never really imagine it being against her will, but since it hints towards it, we have to stay away, and we open with Ha'isha Nikneis. So Be'ez Hashem, we will continue next time.